Thank you so much for being here and sharing in this program of Music of Telamon. I'll say just a few words about Mr. Telamon. He was largely self-taught when he was a child. His parents didn't want him to go down the path of being a musician. And he actually went off to the University of Leipzig studying law at first, but during the course of his higher education, he changed and went into music, and he left us over 3,000 works, one of the most prolific composers of his time. After the University of Leipzig, he had some jobs, and the one he held for about 9 years was in Frankfurt, and then he interviewed for a job in Hamburg, which he was awarded, where he would be taking care of the music, directing and composing, for 5 churches and the town. The city municipal government had festivals and stuff. And it turned out to be a little bit more than he bargained for. So a few months after he'd moved there, there was a similar position in Leipzig with better working conditions. And he went and interviewed, and he was their very first choice candidate. But he went back to Hamburg and negotiated a better contract there and stayed there. The Leipzig folks had to settle for their third choice, who was one of Telemann's good friends, somebody who was considered the greatest organist in the world at the time, who also wrote decent music, by the name of J.S. Bach. If there's a little time afterwards and you'd like to come up and see the harpsichord, I'll hang out for a little while. I know it's not a usual instrument you see every day. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. We've been enjoying the musical arts of five local musicians who gathered to bring you the genius of Telemann. With soprano Eva Peng and harpsichordist Anthony Olson, a longtime husband and wife team of classical music, they both teach in the music department of Northwest Missouri State University. Their musical friends are cellist Brenda Allen, oboist Joseph Michael Tommaso, and flutist Rebecca Donnell. The last piece was from the Telemann Cantata, Erstreu in mich des Wortes Samen, written for the second Sunday before Ash Wednesday in 1732. This has been a Doreen Morande Professional Recital Series concert at Johnson County Community College. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed it. Chuck Smith recorded this for KPR's weekly presentation of Classics Live, which aims to bring you the best in local classical music offerings in case you missed it. I'm Cordelia Brown, your classical friend. Broadcasts of Classics Live are a production of Kansas Public Radio.
You're listening to Classics Live here on Kansas Public Radio. Support for Classics Live on KPR comes from Maselli's, catering to Lawrence, Topeka, Kansas City, and the surrounding areas for almost three decades. Available for wedding receptions, business meetings, or other special events. Details on catering and venue options at Maselli's.com. And Peasley Tech in Lawrence, Kansas. The Peasley Promise offers debt-free career training for local high school students and low-income Douglas County residents. Details and donation info at peasleytech.org/peasleypromise. From the University of Kansas, it's your place to find classical music and NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. We're KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Ellsberg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Turkey says it's in contact with officials in the U.S., Iran, and Israel to try to end a war that's escalated across the Middle East. Turkey's among 12 Muslim and Arab countries that met in Saudi Arabia today after Iran bombed a major liquefied natural gas complex in Qatar last night. NPR's Emily Feng reports.
Turkey has so far stayed out of the regional conflict over Iran. Appearing alongside his Qatari counterpart, Turkey's foreign minister Hakan Fidan said through an interpreter that Turkey is mediating and is in contact with Israel and other countries.
We are speaking to the Americans and Iranians as well. First of all, we try to understand where they stand.
Turkey says it's intercepted three Iranian missiles since the U.S. and Israel began striking Iran. Iran denies firing them at Turkey. But this week, NATO, of which Turkey is a member, deployed a third U.S.-made Patriot air and missile defense system to protect Turkey's Incirlik air base in the south of the country. Emily Fang, NPR News, Van, Turkey.
Major reports out this month say President Trump has damaged American democracy at remarkable speed, pushing the country closer to authoritarianism. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports on the striking consensus on Trump's first year back.
Brightline Watch, which surveys more than 500 U.S. scholars, finds that through tactics such as amassing executive power and attacking the media, Trump has pushed the U.S. system to a point nearly midway between liberal democracy and dictatorship. Dartmouth's Brendan Nyhan co-directs the survey.
I would say the goal is to govern as an authoritarian.
Another report out by Sweden's VDEM Institute found America's democracy ranking plunged last year from 20th to 51st out of 179 countries, a sign, it said, that U.S. democracy is being dismantled at an unprecedented pace. The White House dismissed the findings, calling it, quote, a ridiculous claim made by an irrelevant, blatantly biased organization. Trump has repeatedly said he's no dictator. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
More than three dozen Democratic-led states and local governments are challenging the Trump administration's decision to repeal climate pollution regulations. NPR's Jeff Brady reports the filing argues the administration is required to regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act.
The Trump administration last month repealed the endangerment finding, a 2009 decision that greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels endanger public health and welfare. It's the basis for much of the federal action that's been taken to rein in climate pollution. Trump's Environmental Protection Agency concluded the EPA doesn't have legal authority to regulate greenhouse gases, even though the Supreme Court determined in 2007 it does. This case likely will end up before the Supreme Court again, with more conservative justices deciding the case this time. Jeff Brady, NPR News.
U.S. stocks largely dropped today. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation. Since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts toward a fairer, more just, and civil society. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org. The time is 8:04. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Stardate March 19th. Spring arrives in the Northern Hemisphere tomorrow morning when the sun crosses the celestial equator from south to north, the vernal equinox. Over the next 3 months, the sun will travel ever farther northward, bringing longer, warmer days north of the equator. Vernal comes from the Latin word for spring, and equinox means equal nights. Theoretically, all points on Earth should see equal amounts of daylight and darkness on the equinox. But for several reasons, the interval between sunrise and sunset, which should be exactly 12 hours, varies by a few minutes. The vernal equinox marks the starting point for the system that astronomers use to plot the sky. They measure the positions of astronomical objects using coordinates called right ascension and declination, the equivalent of longitude and latitude. Right ascension is measured in hours, the point where the sun crosses the celestial equator. The projection of Earth's equator on the sky on the vernal equinox is designated as 0 hours. It's the equivalent of 0 degrees longitude, the line that runs through Greenwich, England. And just as Earth's equator marks 0 degrees latitude, the celestial equator is 0 degrees declination. So at the moment of the vernal equinox, the sun stands at celestial coordinates 0, 0, beginning a new cycle through the stars. Tomorrow, the moon and a bright companion. And we have more sky watching tips and much more about our amazing universe in Stardate magazine. Details at stardate.org. For the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Thank you.
Concerto for Oboe and Strings by Vivaldi on Kansas Public Radio. Good evening, I'm Kay McIntyre. That was the New Brandenburg Collegium, Alex Klein, Oboe. From the University of Kansas, we're Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia. You can listen to our live stream and show your support for classical music at kansaspublicradio.org. Composer Michael Dougherty grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, my hometown. This is his Red Cape Tango, a musical metaphor for Superman. It represents Superman's fight to the death with Doomsday and envisions their dance of death as a tango. Red Cape Tango from the North Texas Wind Symphony on KPER.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Red Cape Tango, a musical tribute to Superman on Kansas Public Radio. From the University of Kansas, we're 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, online at kansaspublicradio.org. Speaking of movies, Virtual Cinema A-Go-Go is back tomorrow night with The Mummy's Hand and The Hand of Death. Get your free ticket now at kansaspublicradio.org and join us tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. KPR's Virtual Cinema A-Go-Go is made possible by Dr. Stephen H. Chronister, Healing Smiles of Topeka. From the University of Kansas, we're 91.5 Lawrence and 99.5 Manhattan. Online at kansaspublicradio.org. Come on in, the music's fine. Come In is the title of our next piece for two violins and string orchestra, composed by Vladimir Martynov. Come in to an evening of classical music on Kansas Public Radio.
Thank you.
That's Come In, Vladimir Martynov's work for two violins and string orchestra on Kansas Public Radio. You can really hear the knock on the door in that piece. And I like to think at the end, maybe you got to come in. In his notes on the piece, Martynov said, "Our whole life is but an attempt to find this miraculous entrance. All our deeds are but a timid knocking on this mysterious door. All our hopes are to hear, one day, perhaps, a voice that would respond, 'Come in.' For it is said, 'Knock, and you will be let in.'" Good evening, I'm Kay McIntyre. We'll round out the hour with a brief piece, Pièce Brève for Flute, Oboe, and Harp, by Swiss composer Frank Maton, Heinz Hollinger on oboe, Ursula Hollinger, harp, and Aurel Nicolet, flute. Pièce Brève on Kansas Public Radio. Pièce Brève for Flute, Oboe, and Harp by Frank Maton on Kansas Public Radio. That was Heinz Hollinger on oboe, Ursula Hollinger on harp, and Aurel Nicolai on flute. From the University of Kansas, it's your place to find classical music and NPR news. Kansas Public Radio, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City 91.3, KANQ Chanute 90.3. Tell your smart speakers to play Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre. Coming up next, it's the latest news from NPR, then jazz with Tom Parkinson on KPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. An American F-35 fighter jet made an emergency landing after a combat mission in Iran. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports the pilot was wounded by enemy fire but is in stable condition.
U.S. Central Command acknowledged that the F-35 made a safe but unplanned landing and said the incident is under investigation. But a U.S. official not authorized to speak publicly confirmed to NPR that the F-35 fighter was hit by enemy fire and that the pilot is stable after requiring stitches. It's the first known instance of Iran's anti-aircraft defenses damaging a manned American plane. This news broke hours after Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth said Iran's air defenses have been, quote, flattened. Still, Iran has not shot down a single U.S. or Israeli pilot over nearly 3 weeks of war and thousands of bombing sorties over Iranian airspace. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
NPR has confirmed that President Trump's Board of Peace has given Hamas a formal proposal to lay down its weapons. That's according to a senior U.S. official not authorized to speak publicly. The proposal calls for Hamas and all other militant groups in Gaza to decommission their weapons, as NPR's Daniel Estrin explains.
We have been hearing for many months that maybe Hamas would be asked to, for instance, gradually give up its heavy weapons and only later give up its rifles, its personal firearms. This person seems to be saying that this proposal is for it to give up all of its weapons all at the same time, and not just Hamas, but also new militias that have formed in Gaza during the war, anti-Hamas militias that some of them Israel armed throughout the war.
NPR's Daniel Estrin reporting. Shocking revelations are prompting a reckoning over the legacy of Cesar Chavez. Communities are canceling Chavez Day events and reconsidering how he's remembered. The Texas Newsroom's Lucio Vasquez spoke to historians who say this could be an opportunity to refocus on the broader farm worker movement.
For decades, Cesar Chavez has been revered as a central figure in the fight for farm worker rights. But new reporting that corroborates allegations of sexual assault and child rape is reshaping how that legacy is viewed. Cynthia Orozco is a historian with the League of United Latin American Citizens. She says the moment calls for a shift in focus beyond Chavez himself.
Let's celebrate the farm workers, the farm worker movement, and let's celebrate Dolores Huerta, and let's celebrate the women who are now speaking out.
Orozco says movements are built by people, not just leaders, and that this is a chance to recognize contributions that have often been overlooked. For NPR News, I'm Lucio Vasquez.
Oil prices climbed again because of the war with Iran, sending stock markets lower around the world. The average price for a gallon of regular gasoline in the U.S. is now near $4. This is NPR News. The latest World Happiness Report found that Finland is the happiest land in the world for the ninth year in a row. The report also says that heavy social media use has contributed to a stark decline in well-being among young people. It found that the effects are particularly worrying in teenage girls in English-speaking countries and Western Europe. Uber is investing over $1 billion in Rivian Automotive to make autonomous vehicles as the California-based electric vehicle company builds its Georgia plant. Marlon Hyde with member station WABE has more.
Uber is getting ready to launch 50,000 of its own robo-taxis. The rideshare giant says it will begin deploying driverless vehicles in San Francisco and Miami in 2028, then expand to 25 cities in the U.S., Canada, and Europe by 2031. To start, the company would buy 10,000 fully autonomous vehicles from Rivian. The EV maker plans to start producing its R2 electric SUVs this year as it continues to build its long-delayed Georgia facility roughly 40 minutes east of Atlanta. Uber's initial $300 million investment is still subject to regulatory approval. For NPR News, I'm Marlon Hyde in Atlanta.
A year after his death, an AI version of Val Kilmer will co-star in an independent film called As Deep as the Grave. The producers say Kilmer had signed on to perform the movie before his death. Kilmer's estate gave permission for his digital replication and is being compensated for it. Kilmer died last April from pneumonia at the age of 65. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, celebrating a century of supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. More at mott.org/100.
It's All Light Jazz for you here on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Tom Parkinson. Thanks for joining me for another hour of jazz. We're going to start this hour out with something from multi-instrumentalist Jay Thomas, Blues for McVoody. It's a song that he wrote. He dedicates the whole album, actually, to his friend, Slim Gaylard. Here's Jay Thomas with Billy Higgins on drums, Chuck Israels on bass, and Cedar Walton on the piano. Dave Peterson is the guitarist, and here's Blues for McVoody.
Thank you.
There's pianist Cedar Walton, the Bouncer, the title cut from his final studio album that he recorded in 2011, died early in 2013. Amazing career, started out as so many great jazz musicians have in the Art Blakey School of Music and the Jazz Messengers. Cedar Walton. We heard the Bouncer with Vincent Herring on alto saxophone. That was Steve Touré on trombone, David Williams on bass, and Willie Jones, the third, on the drums. And before that, we heard something from Jay Thomas, the trumpeter, along with Billy Higgins on the drums, Chuck Israels on bass, and Cedar Walton there again on piano. Blues for McVuity, dedicated to his late friend Slim Gaylard. It's All Night Jazz here on Kansas Public Radio. We were just listening to some Cedar Walton music. We have one more here. Cedar wrote something that's become a jazz standard, the tune Bolivia. And here he is playing it with Freddie Hubbard leading this group. Freddie on trumpet, of course, with Ralph Moore on tenor saxophone and Vincent Herring on alto saxophone this time. David Williams returns on bass and Billy Higgins is the drummer. Here's Freddie Hubbard with Bolivia. Thank you.
Thank you.
There goes a group that calls themselves the Cookers, a bit of a super group of the fine players in jazz from about 10 years ago when this was released time and time again. And it had George Cables at the piano with Donald Harrison on alto saxophone. That was David Weiss on the trumpet, Cecil McBee and Billy Hart on bass and drums. And before that, we had a trio led by Ron Carter along with Mulgrew Miller on piano and Russell Malone on the guitar. And we listened to one that Russell Malone wrote for his friend Cedar Walton called Cedar Tree. It's All Night Jazz here on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Tom Parkinson. Well, we just heard George Cables with that group, The Cookers, and that was from about 10 years ago. Here's one that George recorded in 2024, a recent release from George Cables, I Hear Echoes. And we're going to hear one of his compositions, Like a Lover. George Cables on piano. Thank you. couple of selections from recently released albums. That one from the Kansas City, Kansas-born KU alum Brandon Sanders, the drummer leading that group. The Tables Will Turn is the name of the disc. Keith Brown on the piano with Chris Lewis on tenor saxophone, Warren Wolf on the vibes, and David Wong, the bassist, with Brandon Sanders leading the group. He's the drummer. We listened to a Tony Williams tune, Sister Cheryl. And before that, something recorded in 2024 from pianist George Cables, recorded I Hear Echoes for his 80th birthday. We listened to one of his compositions, Like a Lover, with Essie on bass and Jerome Jennings on drums. I'm Tom Parkinson. This is Kansas Public Radio. It's all night jazz for you. Here's another one that was released on Smoke Sessions Records in 2024 from the guitarist Peter Bernstein, with Brad Meldow on the piano, Vicente Archer is the bassist, and Al Foster is on the drums. This one is a Peter Bernstein composition, Ditty for Dewey. There's a group led by the drummer Al Foster with Nicholas Payton on trumpet, Chris Potter, the saxophonist, Kevin Hayes on piano, Vicente Archer on bass. One of Al Foster's compositions, Monk's Bossa. Before that, we heard a recent release from Peter Bernstein, one of his compositions, Diddy for Dewey, with Brad Meldow at the piano, along with Vicente Archer and Al Foster on bass and drums again. That's from Peter Bernstein's release from 2024, Better Angels. It's All Night Jazz here on Kansas Public Radio. From the University of Kansas, we are KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, 91.5 KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, 89.7 KANV and KANV HD1 Oldsburg, Junction City, 91.3 KANQ Chanute at 90.3, and we're streaming live online 24/7 at kansaspublicradio.org.
Support for Jazz on KPR comes from Kansas Tree Care, local arborists who provide professional tree care in the greater Lawrence area, and who can be reached at kansastreecare.com or at 785-843-TREE. And Love Garden Sounds, a vinyl record and CD store sponsoring the Vinyl Vault Hour on Jazz in the Night. Store details and buying policies at lovegardensounds.com. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Here's a look at the KPR weather forecast. It's 66 and fair. Wind is from the north. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. It's 66 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. President Trump insisted today that he's not putting troops anywhere, but seemed to leave the door open to using ground troops in the Iran war if necessary. Here's NPR's Meyer Lyson reporting.
President Trump said that the U.S. will do whatever is necessary in the war in Iran, but he told reporters that if he was going to commit ground troops, quote, I certainly wouldn't tell you. Polls show committing ground troops would be extremely unpopular, on top of a war that most Americans already oppose. The president also addressed reports of a potential $200 billion funding request for the war in Iran. Trump called that a small price to pay. But Congress has not voted to approve the war, and many Republicans could find it hard to justify spending the equivalent of a quarter of the Pentagon's annual budget at a time when gas and other prices are rising because of the war. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will hold off on more strikes on a key Iranian natural gas field. Speaking to reporters in Jerusalem, Netanyahu confirmed that President Trump made the request and that Israel acted alone in attacking Iran's South Pars gas field. The Senate one step closer to confirming President Trump's choice to run the Homeland Security Department, Oklahoma Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. Here's NPR's Elena Moore.
The Senate Homeland Security Committee has voted to advance Mullen's nomination, with eight lawmakers voting for and seven against. Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania was the sole Democrat to vote yes, and the only Republican on the panel to vote no, Committee Chairman Rand Paul of Kentucky. During Mullen's committee hearing on Wednesday, Paul questioned whether he was the right person to lead DHS, zeroing in on Mullen's temperament and frequent use of violent rhetoric. Mullen walked some of that rhetoric back and distanced himself from the administration on some hardline immigration enforcement policies. Mullen's nomination now proceeds to the Senate floor for a vote, but it's unclear when that will happen. Elena Moore, NPR News.
The Trump administration announced today that it will move significant management of the nation's federal student loan portfolio to the Treasury Department, continuing President Trump's efforts to eventually shutter the Education Department, NPR's Sequoia Carrillo reports.
In the administration's latest move to shift responsibilities away from the Department of Education, management of much of the country's student loan portfolio, worth nearly $1.7 trillion, will be phased over to the Treasury Department. The administration says Treasury is better equipped to manage the program. Loans in default will move over first, followed by loans that are in good standing. And in the final phase, Treasury will take over the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA. More than 40 million borrowers hold federal student loans, while about 12 million of them are either in default or on their way there. Sequoia Carrillo, NPR News.
This is NPR. California Governor Gavin Newsom is supporting a proposal to rename Cesar Chavez Day. Newsom said Thursday that he will move quickly on legislation state lawmakers are considering that would rename March 31st as Farm Workers Day. Leaders in other states and cities are considering similar moves following abuse allegations against the late labor leader. LeBron James has added another NBA record to his name. James tied the career mark for games played when he started for the Los Angeles Lakers in Thursday night's game against the Miami Heat. James has now played in 1,611 regular season NBA games, tying Robert Parrish's mark that stood for nearly 30 years. Researchers believe pythons may contain clues to help treat a range of human ailments, from heart disease to muscle atrophy, Ari Daniel reports.
A python can go months without feeding. When it does eat, its body undergoes a dramatic transformation, reversibly enlarging its heart and other organs. Plus, digestion dumps all sorts of molecules into the bloodstream. A team of researchers found one molecule in particular that surged 1,000 times after a python consumed a meal. It appears to act as an appetite suppressant by targeting the hypothalamus in the brain. Jack Google is a molecular biologist at the University of Colorado Boulder.
When we give this molecule to obese mice, they eat less and they lose weight,
suggesting that it could be a strong candidate for a new weight loss drug. The team's now founded a company to look into it. For NPR News, I'm Ari Daniel.
And you're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
It's Kansas Public Radio, where we bring you NPR news at the top of every hour and jazz all night long. We're going to start this hour with a bluesy kind of thing from back in 1960. Here's a great tenor saxophonist, Gene Ammons. Tommy Flanagan is on the piano here with Doug Watkins on bass and Art Taylor on the drums. From the 1960 prestige disc, Boss Tenor, here's Hittin' the Jug. Thank you.
Bye.